welcome to Fraggle Talk Classic, the unofficial Fraggle Rock podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. My name is Beth, and I am rewatching for the millionth time.
My name is Julia, and I'm rewatching for the first time in 10 years.
My name is Adam, and your free trial to jokes about watching things for the first time has expired. If you would like to sign up for a subscription, please follow this link. Wow, that was weird. I think I blacked out for a second. Anyways, we have a guest!
Hello! Who is that I see?
Hello! This is Cameron Garrity. It's so good to be here.
Thank you so much for being here, Cameron.
Welcome. We're glad you're here.
Would you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, I am long time, first time in terms of Fraggle Talk, and I've been around the Tough Pigs universe over the years. I love to draw the Muppets, and I love talking about the Muppets. My friend and I, Adam, have our own podcast about puppetry called Puppet Tears that we've been doing since about 2018. It's on a bit of a hiatus right now for a couple personal reasons, but we've talked to all sorts of puppeteers throughout the Muppets history, and I've just always grown up on this stuff, and it's my favorite thing to talk about. So I'm very excited to be here with you all.
That's awesome.
Brad?
Yeah. And you also do a bit of your own puppetry.
I do. Yes. Thank you for talking about me. Yeah, I do puppetry on the side for local theaters and short films and things like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's really cool to follow your work and now finally get to work with you.
Yes, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, speaking of liking talking about Fraggles,
let's do it.
So today we are talking about episode 2 of season 2, Boober Rock, which originally aired on January 9th, 1984, written by B.P. Nichol and directed by Norman Campbell, a Canadian composer, television producer, and television director, best known for co-writing the 1956 CBC TV musical, Anne of Green Gables. So not the one that we grew up with in the 80s, but one that I have not seen this version. I may have to go track that down.
Oh, that makes this episode make so much more sense. I was so resistant to watching Anne of Green or reading Anne of Green Gables when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and I finally watched the series with my mom, and I would have watched it a lot sooner if people had told me this is just a story about an autistic girl.
Right? Oh my God.
Because that's just the whole premise is here's this autistic girl who is not shamed into silence by society, and everybody realizes she's awesome and learns from her.
Yep.
That's it. That's the book. It's great.
Cool beans.
So we start off with Doc and Sprocket getting into the classic sibling roommate fight of, well, your stuff's on my side and my stuff's on your side. Let's just put a big line down the middle, mm-hmm. which my notes on this are, oh, there's no way this possibly doesn't go well. Yep.
It feels very classic, like 80s, 90s sitcom trope. Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember this exact mm-hmm. episode of Full House as well.
Same. Literally, yep. I think I put Full House in my notes.
Can we talk about the electronic sponge that Doc is working on? Because that seems dangerous.
It's bonkers.
Yeah. There's a lot of open wires, too.
Mm-hmm. Wires and water.
There's like, is there a flashlight on it? I was trying to see all the different parts to it. Much like all of Doc's inventions, it doesn't make the most sense.
I mean, again, why? What do you mean, why? I haven't even figured out how yet.
Exactly. Yeah, don't ask too many questions. Just go with it.
But yeah, what would you use an electric sponge for? I think you mentioned something about car washing being a lot easier.
And picking up oil spills, he mentions at one point.
That's what it was.
Yes.
Oh, I missed that.
It's a noble goal, but I'm not sure how effective.
I mean, look, nobility isn't everything. Argon is a noble gas, and it'll still kill you if you breathe it. So, like, I don't know if that's actually true.
I mean, probably.
Radon will do it. Radon will definitely kill you. Probably. Again, I don't know.
So we
cut to Boomer and the Fraggles.
Well, so first the first thing we see is a doozer hanging from a moving construction piece on a crane, mm-hmm. like he's karaoke singing Wrecking Ball. And he comes back a little later. He's just hanging out, swinging around, living his best doozer life.
Well, that's the first shot we get when we go to the Fraggles, and it's I mean, we do get Boober getting upset that the Doozer construction's in his way, and then he just walks through it.
Yeah.
But we didn't need this shot of, like, the Doozer, like, doing this work and, like, speaking, and, you know, it feeds into, you know, mark your bingo cards, like, just all of these little, you know,
yeah, no scenes
seamless.
In the world building. It's very
no
organic.
Seams, yeah.
I feel like my gut says there's going to be some more Doozer plot lines coming up in this season,
mm-hmm.
just because they've been making a point of including them in all of the foreground a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think Marjorie set it up well last season in the episode where she's trying to get a Gorg, a Fraggle, and a Doozer into the garden together in order to, mm-hmm. you know, realize how much they all need each other. And they didn't at the time, but I think she's setting us up for future interspecies mm-hmm. relationship growth.
Yeah. So the Doozer is Doozering. Red is leading some kind of singing lesson. And Boober has this great line. He says, between the Doozers doozering and the Fraggles frenzying, you can't think or sleep around here. And that's just me after a day at work. Like, I get it, buddy. Sometimes noise too much.
Sometimes noise too much.
And won't go where no noise.
Very much so. I enjoyed, too, and I wasn't necessarily thinking about it as I was watching this episode, but as you're saying right now that it's kind of the beginning of a season, the way that the one Doozer says after Boober knocks down his tower, like, hooray, now we get to rebuild it. And it's just another
yeah.
little bit
yeah.
of world building that kind of reminds the audience, like, he's not being a jerk. Like, this is how it works. And the Doozers actually really like when the towers get destroyed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We saw in the previous season, the Doozers are super cool with it because they just like building. And so when something gets destroyed or eaten, they're like, cool, there's more space to build. They've already laid the groundwork for the ecosystem there of how it all works together in some strange way.
Yeah. And then Moki walks up and is doing the thing that annoys me about a lot of amateur artists. I love art. I love amateur art. I really don't love when the entire focus is, but no, I need to show you this thing without any consideration as to whether your audience is receptive or interested.
Yeah.
It has the same energy as someone trying to tell you about their dream when you're trying to get ready for work in the morning. Like, no, thank you.
I wrote this later. It feels very similar to like white guy with a guitar at a party energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I want to play. Come on, let me play this. And it's like, but no. And Boober very clearly says no, and Moki just kind of doesn't listen and keeps pushing on. So this is a Moki, I'm angry at Moki episode. This is an Adam doesn't like Moki episode.
Oh, see, in this moment, I have a little bit more empathy as a poet for Moki because I've been in the situation, mostly with like my partner, where one of us is like, hey, can I share this poem? And maybe the other is like, maybe not right now, but the other one really wants to share the poem. So I've been here. This mm-hmm. this is a rare circumstance where I'm like, I kind of get it with Moki that she's got something that she wants to share. But I do agree, though, also about, you know, pushing your art on friends when maybe they're not in the right headspace for it.
Yeah. And it does end up being a message that he needs to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the end.
But she doesn't know that.
It's just
and he doesn't know that yet either.
Honestly, I was a little bit annoyed that that was a message he needs to hear because that's like, no, it feels like they're saying, oh, if only he'd listened. When, and it's like, no, he didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
No one is entitled to an audience.
She does have a great line later in the episode, though, where she says, a poem is a gift. And I was like, you are correct, Moki. I will give you this in this episode. Finally, I'm on your side.
See, I'm not as much of a poet as you are, but I definitely write poetry. And I always, I don't know, my response is always, like, if I ask someone if they're up for reading a poem and they're like, no, I'm like, okay. And I'll go ask somebody else.
Yeah.
There are other people in the community.
Right.
Aside from the people who don't want to hear my poem.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Boober right now. She can go find someone else who's excited about it.
She also has that line of like, oh, you always give the best feedback. And it's like, okay, you want him to do editing work for you? Just drop everything and be your editor? Moki, come on.
Some unpaid labor right there.
Yep.
At least give him some diamonds or radishes.
Along with him being super annoyed by Moki, we've already seen him be annoyed with Red, but Red comes in with her choir, her group that are like doing this weird singing, chanting, mm-hmm. and they also start singing a version of the theme song, which I don't think we've ever seen like them acknowledge the theme song outside of the theme song before.
I was going to ask if that had happened.
Mm-mm.
Not to my knowledge.
Nope.
Does this happen again, Beth, or is this a pretty standalone moment?
I'm pretty sure it's a standalone moment. Just for this making fun of Boober moment.
Yeah, I mean, the episode is called Boober Rock, and so it does feel a little more apt to bring in Down at Fraggle Rock and turn it into Down at Boober Rock,
yeah,
since, you know, what the rest of the episode will entail.
I mean, maybe that's how they start every day, is by singing the Fraggle Rock theme song, which to them is just like, it's the song we sing every day, and now we go about our Fraggly lives.
Oh, that gives the theme song so much more weight, if that's just how every day begins for the Fraggles.
Party, certainly. So Boober's grumpy, and he, like, leaves to go back to, like, the sleeping cave to get somewhere quiet. And then Red, and I'm skipping over some stuff, but this moment drove me up a wall. Red prances into the room, just belting a diss track. She has rewritten the Fraggle theme song to be just about dunking on Boober, mm-hmm, and then just hits him.
Yeah.
Just hits him and knocks him over. Like, what? Imagine rolling into a room with your overstimulated friend, belting four bars about what a jerk they are, and then just clocking them in the back of the head. What in the world?
Oh, Red.
She's a lot.
Yeah, this is again, not great friendship moments for some folks in this episode, and this is definitely a big one for Red. It's a big old yikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she kind of just keeps persisting until, I don't know, like, it feels like several minutes in where she's finally like, oh, I was just playing around,
yeah,
you know? Like, when he gets really, what, she knocks him over and he gets, like, the mark on his favorite scarf. And at first she's like, well, that's what laundry is for. And it's really when he doesn't let up being angry where she's like, okay, but I was just joking. And, like, doesn't really offer a real apology out the gate.
Yeah. We get the funny but heartbreaking line, okay, go ahead, laugh. Trample on my tenderest feelings.
Yup.
Oh, Boober.
I missed that. Oh, I was going to say, I was really impressed that a lot of this scene that we're talking about was done in just one take.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, from a puppetry perspective, I was just, I actually wrote down everything that happens. Red enters in with her diss track. The camera kind of follows her, but then Boober falls over with the laundry basket. Presumably, Dave has to change to a different Boober puppet that has the scarf attached to it. So he goes down and comes up with two different Boober puppets. That bleach nut explodes. And then Wembley, like, picks up the pillow to start hyperventilating in it. And it's all done so seamlessly. I was just like, oh my gosh, the amount of detail that went into making the world just seem so effortless when it could have easily taken, you know, many takes to get all that choreography right.
Right?
Yeah. There's got to be a lot happening below the frame.
Without a doubt.
One of the things I'm really enjoying about this season is they're putting a lot more energy into, like, intentional camera work and intentional cinematography instead of just sort of standard sitcom shots. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we talked about that in the very first episode. And, you know, in watching a couple other episodes to review for Tough Pigs, I've certainly noticed they've upped the game with cinematography, which is awesome. Like, they don't need to do that. Like, the first season looked great as it was, especially for, like, a kids show in the 80s. But the fact that they're really pushing themselves, you know, just speaks to, like, the merit of all the people working on this show.
Yeah. So the storyteller gets name dropped, which I was excited about. I was like, ah, oh, the storyteller. Do we get to see her again? And we do, and it's great. But they hear about these boring caves, the caves of boredom, and they accidentally break the bleach seed, and Red goes, at least this stuff clears your brain, and that is not how bleach works.
No.
Yeah.
You should not inhale bleach.
Bleach clears a lot of things. Your brain, I mean, I guess if you applied it directly, it would, but then you don't have a brain, and you need that.
Yeah, this is one of those young 20-something housekeeping lessons that it seems like everyone has to learn the hard way of accidentally mixing a cleaner with bleach in it with a cleaner with ammonia in it.
Oh
yeah, that kills the man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's when you panically yell to your roommates, like, open all the windows and air everything out. Yeah, don't breathe that stuff in.
Put that outside and then don't eat the birds that die.
Yep. So maybe it's not true bleach because it does release this smoky looking stuff. It looks like dry ice smoke.
Yeah.
So maybe it serves the purpose laundry wise of what bleach does without actually being. So it certainly makes the Fraggles cough when they breathe it in, but they also claim that it clears their heads. So it's like a, you know, good for a moment if you're having foggy brain, but bad long term, maybe?
Yeah.
Probably.
But there's this bit where Red's like, come on, all Fraggles love like loud and play. And then Boober has this great line. I wrote it down. He says, I'm not like other Fraggles then. I need somewhere quiet.
Yeah.
And God, if that's not a huge autistic mood.
Mm.
That is why he is my spirit Fraggle.
He's so good. Mm-hmm. I remember being so grateful for the teachers that would let me just hang out in their room at recess and read a book because it was quiet there.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't screaming.
Yeah, same. When I was in elementary school.
Yeah. This whole Boober getting fed up in these opening minutes, it's very relatable. You know, even folks who I think aren't as much like Boober as we all seem to be can probably relate to at least some moment in their life of being overstimulated and wanting to get away from everybody. Everybody's just being annoying. I want to go mm-hmm. be by myself and have things be the way I want them to be for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so then he gets a song. And boy, howdy, I love this song.
Yes.
There's this amazing mirror shot where it's just him hanging out with him. And it's just this wonderful song about, like, I'm good company for me.
Yeah.
And the vibe has a little bit of New Orleans in it.
Yeah, I checked with our, not Dan Levy, I don't know him, David Levy, mm-hmm. fellow Muppet podcaster, and I was, you know, asking in the Tough Pigs Discord, like, hey, is this actually Busby Berkeley inspired? Is that ringing a bell? And he was like, yes, Busby Berkeley, among other early cinema classics.
Mm-hmm. Self-love is not a concept you see a lot in any kind of media, much less children's media. And I love getting to see that expressed. And I'm a little bit annoyed that the episode, the whole point of the episode is very much that it's like, actually, you need community. And it's like, well, yes, you do. But also, sometimes you just need to go be alone and be with yourself. And that's fine.
Yeah.
It reminded me of one of my favorite songs of all time. And I would love to read you four lines from this song, if I may.
Please do.
Please.
The song is called Sweep Me Off My Feet. And it's this great little story about this guy who's like getting all dressed up for a date. And then the twist is that the date is with him. He's just going on a date. He's taking himself out. And after that little bit of narration, he cuts to the chorus and says, I've finally found a love to last a lifetime. Someone who'll be there when I get old. A friend who just knows exactly what I'm thinking. And takes the time to laugh at all my jokes.
Hmm.
I love that.
Isn't that great? Isn't that just beautiful? And like, I want more positive representation of that.
Yeah. So, I don't know if I've talked about this on this podcast, but...
what a sentence.
I've talked about it on my friend's podcast, who is also my singing teacher. Check out Zeitgeist Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Very fascinating and fun stuff. And so she and I were chatting about, you know, Muppet songs, because that's all we've done together, is all of the songs that I've practiced have been Muppet songs, because there's so many great ones,
mm-hmm.
and they mean so much to me. And this was such a fun one to practice together. Like, I'd been living alone for a little while now, and had finally, you know, settled into understanding what my own rhythms are of, like, okay, how long does it take when it's just me in the house for it to get dirty to the point where, oh, now I need to clean, and you know, what are the things that I need to, you know, feel better when I'm having a grumpy day, and all of that stuff. And it just encapsulates so perfectly that mood of, like, yes, I found my little space, and I'm so happy here, and I'm great company with me by myself. And I love that they're, like, in these daydream shots that Boober has, he's got these other multiple selves that are singing and dancing along, you know, providing the background chorus.
Mm-hmm.
It's so great, because, like, yeah, you've got the different aspects of yourself that are keeping you company. It's not insane to talk to yourself and be like, hey, here's what I think. What do you think?
Yeah. Or even to just be like, hey, me, how we doing? How we doing right now? It's a good thing.
Yeah. I love this for Boober. And I kind of, same with you. I felt a little bit disappointed by the ending, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
Well, while we're on this scene too, I love any time that they can use the puppet doubles to be something in a scene. You know, they're great examples of multiple cookie monsters in a scene or multiple beakers, and to see a bunch of what we know are just extra tools in their tool belt mm-hmm. to be able to make the show, but to be able to put them on display in this way is just so charming to me. I'd never get old with that puppet trick.
It's so good. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Especially when they have the right sort of setting to make it seem like it's just sort of an organic part of like a fantasy or a fantastical element instead mm-hmm. of there just being like five cookie monsters all fighting over a cookie.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they do that in a really slick way. Like we go from, you know, Boober singing alone in his caves to a daydream shot of him singing in front of a bunch of angled mirrors mm-hmm. with, of course, bubbles
floating
around. Oh my
god, I love that shot so much.
Yeah.
And then he like spins around to like sing to and with himself. And then we transition into now the other Boober puppets come in
mm-hmm.
and they're dancing with, you know, laundry and they're dancing around a maypole. And I love when we cut to Boober playing this big harp with a model of his own head as the decorative top to the harp.
That was very good.
Everyone needs one of those.
Oh, yeah. Do you not have one?
Not yet.
Wow. Get on that. What a weirdo not having a face harp. I've had mine since I was like 15.
Oh, dang. I need to get on that.
Julia, you got a face harp, right?
Oh, yeah. I've got two.
Oh, wow. Yeah, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's a guy on Etsy who does it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know Gary.
I do know Gary.
Gary's great. Gary's the best.
Gary the
Beth,
face harp
I gotta
harp
send
guy.
You a link to Gary's Etsy shop. Guy. So yep. good. If it's your first face harp, he'll get you like 20% off.
I don't want to take 20% off my face. I like my face.
You know what? That's fair. So Boober decides he's going to go off to the Caves of Boredom because that sounds great. And then we get to come back to Doc. And boy, howdy, the thing that you thought was going to happen happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. And I appreciate the way that they present this, actually, because Sprocket wants his food, which is on Doc's side of the room. And Doc's like, this is a very firm boundary. But then Doc wants his blueprints, and he's like, oh, well, it's just a little rope. And boy, howdy, let me tell you, being so firm about your boundary lines when it's somebody else and then immediately minimizing it when it's you is every argument between children that I have ever had to mediate. Oh, my God. I get that you don't have an overdeveloped sense of cognitive empathy yet, but buddy, we got to work on that because otherwise you're going to die lonely.
Oh, yep.
It also reminds me of like when kids check their parents for breaking the rules. Like,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, mom, why are you having soda? Like, you told us that that's not good for you.
Oh, yeah.
The relationship between Doc and Sprocket seemed very paternal, you know, dad and child to me in this little scene more so than usual.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a power difference between them.
Yes.
And sometimes it swings a little more in Doc's favor than other times. But in this one, at least to give him some credit, you know, it's clear that he's frustrated when he realizes, like, oh, shoot, I have to abide by this as well. He doesn't just reach over and grab the blueprints that he wants. He sits down and negotiates with Sprocket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're always on Doc for his dog owner abilities. And then this one, it felt for me much more just like a crappy roommate situation of, yeah, you know,
it really did,
which I feel like most people have been in. You have a roommate, you're clashing for some reason. And, you know, hence this trope that has popped up in, you know, we've seen with Full House with like sisters, but also it's definitely been in like TV shows about college roommates or, you know, adults living together as well for a reason. And so I didn't like take any notes this time about like, oh, Doc shouldn't be doing this as a dog owner, because it's like, you wouldn't have this conversation right. with your dog. Right. You wouldn't be like, okay, you're going to stay on this side and this is my side, because the dog isn't going to understand and is going to be like, oh, my toy's over here and go and get it, you know. So I did kind of appreciate, I feel like we talked a little bit about that in the first episode about maybe how there's a slight shift with Doc and Sprocket that we're going to see where, mm-hmm. you know, Sprocket has a lot of agency despite, you know, being a dog, and Doc does feed him things like that. But I do like seeing more of this shift where it becomes a little bit more fantastical instead of like Doc being like, I should feed you, but also I'm distracted, so I'm not going to feed you.
Right.
It's yeah, a bit more, it has a little bit more charm to it for me. And it's just silly.
I do like it. It feels less, I'm less angry about it and mm-hmm. more just sort of long suffering.
Yeah,
that's fair.
So we cut back to the Fraggles, and Moki and Gobo are going to visit Boober. And there's just a great little moment here where Moki's like, oh, I haven't read you my poem, have I? And Gobble goes, and I haven't read you Uncle Matt's latest postcard, have I? And Moki just does the immediate hands on hip, scrunched up Muppet face. And it's like, aw, Moki, I know you want attention, but in a good community, attention goes both ways. If you want to get attention, you have to give it. And you don't want to give it, do you? You just want to get attention.
Also, I think that this is a move that Gobo does all the time when someone brings something up that he doesn't want to do. He's like, or we could do this postcard. And so there's also the chance that her and everyone else are like, we're so tired of these postcards, Gobo.
I mean, everyone always has a negative response to it. I just appreciated it as his sort of riposte to the like, oh, you want to read me a poem and you don't care whether or not I want to hear it? Well, I want to read you this postcard and I don't care whether or not you want to hear it.
Mm-hmm. And this postcard's about the subway and how silly creatures also travel to and fro through caves in the ground.
I did like him describing a subway train as another moving cave that screams while it moves.
What do you guys think the humans think Matt is?
What a great question. Just a little guy.
He's just a little guy. He's like a silly little guy.
Beth, you brought up how like sometimes it's as if no one can see Matt and he's operating the world like just unrecognized by anybody. And sometimes like it's kids or animals, but this one clearly like he faints and everybody can see him.
Right. So they see something or someone capable of fainting.
Have we seen that before where like a group of people are acknowledging him and no one is being like, this is clearly not a person, but we're not freaking out about this being a weird creature or an alien or something.
Yeah, I forget which episode it was in last season where he was skateboarding.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And the skateboarders did the same thing. They came over to make sure he's okay. And we've seen him, you know, buy an ice cream cone and, you know, function in human society enough. But we've also seen him be, you know, mistaken for a pig. And
right.
Well, no, he had a brilliant costume on.
He did. He had a pig.
He was in disguise.
Perfect pig.
I guess canonically, too, there are Muppets in this Fraggle Rock world, if we extend it to like Muppet Family Christmas. So in theory, they could also just be like, oh, I recognize this guy from television.
Right. A small felt based person.
Yes.
There's one other little bit that I want to point out here, especially in terms of just world building. He sees an escalator and he says he compares it to a Doozer conveyor belt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is that continuing to loop the Doozers in so that the viewer is aware of them, it's also just a really sweet thing because we get to see him processing a new thing through the lens of what he already knows. And that's really good, really good writing.
Yeah. And just saying hi to a baby while he's at it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
But I love in segments like this when Matt points out some of the more absurd aspects of silly creature culture.
Yeah.
Like, why are they just standing around? And this place is very boring. Why are they here? Which, honestly, yeah.
Can you imagine if there were activities at a subway?
Oh, that would be great.
That would be very cool.
It's like a little arcade, like a Pac-Man game.
That'd be pretty rad.
Little library.
Yes, little free library. Oh, see, that's a great idea.
A juggler.
I mean, I suppose if you're in a big enough city, you get the occasional musician.
Mm-hmm.
Street performer kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So they get to the Caves of Boredom, and there's this great little bit, because Boober has the little toll ticket blocker thingy, and they just kind of duck under it. And it's not even that much of a complicated puppetry thing, but it's just really smooth, and it's really organic, and it just feels very natural in a way that I really appreciated it.
And something they've started, like, even before the postcard started seeding, was that Boober is setting up his space, and we see all these, like, flowers behind him that are, like, kind of moving, and there's smoke, but it's not really clear just yet. But he has this moment before his friends visit him where he has trouble, like, remembering their names and remembering, I think, like, when he's setting up the laundry and can't, like, for a moment remember the names of the different items. And then when his friends appear, he does not remember them right off the bat. He's like, halt, who's goes there? And they're like, it's us. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. And you start like kind of, for me, I started putting it together at this point, like, oh, okay, there's something going on with these caves and it's tinkering with his memory. Mm-hmm. And I think it was this part where I think Gobo goes under, but Moki stays out And Gobo has a moment of like also kind of forgetting, but Moki doesn't because she doesn't go into the caves. And I thought that was pretty clever to also like kind of keep conveying what's going on without saying it just yet.
Ooh, I missed that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, what moment are you referring to? I didn't see that.
Oh, no. Okay, so I messed up. Okay, so what happened is that Gobo and Moki go to see Boober, and Moki is the one that goes in to check on Boober. And as she's leaving, she tries to offer, there's this moment where she tries to offer him assistance, but it's almost like she can't find the words, and she keeps like restarting, and it's like she's forgotten like what she's offering him in the first place. And Gobo was the one that stayed outside and didn't come in. He seems perfectly fine during the whole interaction. So it's so tiny, but I was like, oh, because she went in for a moment, and then she came out and like was clearing up the brain fog as she's like leaving with Gobo. So that's what I picked up on.
Yeah. Well, Gobo did go in too briefly, but he was there for a lot less time.
Yeah.
Like, he was the second one to enter and the first one to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So it would make more sense if he has had less exposure to the purple flowers that are making people forget.
Sure. And obviously, like, I don't think there's, like, the people who wrote this episode, like, put it down to a science of how,
right,
you know, I guess spoiler for how this episode's going, you know, the flowers are making them forget and potentially they're going to eat the fraggles. I'm not really sure the purpose of these plants, but they, you know, it did feel very intentional, like this moment as Moki's walking away, but it's still like so early and they don't know anything about these caves. You know, it's just like this little tiny, you know, clue of what's going on as we see it with like other fraggles, because we've already seen Boober several times not like remember his friends' names or his laundry and other things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a real nice bit of acting too of Boober clearly not knowing who Moki and Gobo were, but wishing that he did. Like, it was very reminiscent to me of Kermit at the end of Muppets Take Manhattan being like,
I really
don't remember you. I wish I did. Yeah, puppets with amnesia.
That was a solid Kermit.
Oh, thank you.
That was a really good Kermit.
Oh, Adam, have you not seen Cam's Kermit work? It's stunning.
No.
Like, I was so honored when, Cam, you did this, like, Christmas Kermit TikTok that, oh my gosh. So I went on moving right along, talking about John Denver and the Muppets at Christmas Together, and defending how I wish the sad version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, you know, got played more often, and it's never been done by the Muppets, and how if it was ever going to be done by the Muppets, John Denver and Rolf
should have done
it would have been the perfect time to use that. And then Cam comes along and has Kermit singing the sad version and saying like, hey, this can be a tough time of year, and I'm thinking about you, and I care about you. And I was like, oh my god, this is perfect.
Can I tell you all my favorite Kermit moment? I've posted it in the chat a while back, but I want to share it on air.
Yeah.
So one of the new Muppet movies, Danny Trejo had a bit of a bit part in it. He was one of the people in the jail. It's great because there's a great bit where the jail warden is like, good night, Russian mafia guy. Mm-hmm. Good night, Mexican cartel guy. Good night, Danny Trejo.
Yeah, it's great.
But while they were filming, his mom passed. And everybody, you know, on set as he was leaving was like giving him their condolences, and he just kind of brushed them off. And then the guy who was doing Kermit gave him condolences from Kermit in character, and Danny Trejo burst into tears.
Yeah.
Puppetry's powerful.
Yes, it is.
So, speaking of powerful puppetry, we get to see the storyteller again.
Well, so real quick.
But first we get to see Wembley joining and being forgetful.
Real quick, I think it's an important thing to note that, you know, when Moki and Gobo come to visit, and you can tell that Boober's trying to, like, you know, brush them off and be like, I'm fine, nice to see you, go away now, please. That both of them offer help. Like, Gobo says, we just wanted to see if you needed anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they're leaving, Moki's like, you know, hey, if you ever need anything, anything at all. And he's like, no, I'm fine, get out of here, bye. I feel like that, for me, is what plants the seed of him being disconnected from community, which is kind of the point of this episode. That if he'd said, like, oh, actually, now that you mention it, like, I, you know, don't have this thing I need for living alone, or, you know, now's not a good time, but let's plan, you know, next Thursday, y'all come over and have tea with me, then maybe Boober living by himself would have been more sustainable. If we ignore the noxious purple flowers. but because they're making him forget, he's unintentionally cutting himself off from his community, and no Fraggle is an island. You can't you can't be completely self-sustaining.
That is not how that works.
Yeah.
There is actually one more beat I wanted to touch on before we get to see the storyteller again, because Red continues to conduct her choir, and she at one point is like, louder, you guys are Fraggles, not Gorgs. And then they all start singing louder, and they just start throwing puppets into the air.
Yes.
So hit your bingo cards, yeet a puppet. This is a new way that they yeet puppets, and boy howdy, makes me laugh every time.
It's very, very good. So specifically, she is leading them in a chant of the word whoopee.
Yep.
And like it established early on from the very first brainstorming pitches for this show, Fraggles live by the word, and the word is whoopee.
Really?
Yes. Like this is a sacred concept to them. And so Red is basically like, it's the same as if she were, you know, leading them in like, hey, this is the song and dance of our people. This is an ancient prayer that we say together. This is a very important cultural thing, and it's important to get it right.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was unaware. So before we get to see the storyteller again, we get this great little bit where Boober's just sort of trying to figure out existence, and Wembley is there, and they're both kind of forgetful, but Boober way more so than Wembley. And there's a bit where Boober's like, but why are you Wembley? And Wembley says, oh, well, I mean, they thought it meant easily makes up his mind. And Boober says, do you like it? And Wembley says, I can't decide.
Yes.
And it's just this great little bit. Mm-hmm. Made me giggle.
Yeah.
But then the other Fraggles go and see the storyteller, which this is the first time we have a different performer doing the storyteller, correct?
Terry Angus, yes, first time.
Mm-hmm. This is Terry Angus. And it is one of the few times that a character changes from one performer to another over the course of the show.
Was it Richard season one?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I was like, I would have to look that up.
Is this also the first time that she's horny for Traveling Matt?
Oh my gosh.
This is the first time that she's horny for Traveling Matt.
God. I was literally about to be, she gets so hot and heavy about Matt in a way that I would be uncomfortable if I was Gobo.
Yes.
Or Eddie Fraggle.
She gets real thirsty on the main. It is... She's literally swoons at one point.
She just like, she leans back against the cave. She starts like touching her body in a weird way as she's talking about him. And it's like, this is a kid's show, ma'am. What are you doing?
Ma'am, please. I know you don't actually have pants, but please keep it in your pants. Please. Come on now.
Oh, but yeah, she reveals to the Fraggles that the Fraggle squad that the caves used to be called the Caves of Forgetfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Someone should put up signs.
They keep forgetting to.
<forgot. laughs>
So the advice she gives is that you have to write down whatever it is you need to remember and then take that list with you.
Mm-hmm.
Which I in turn wrote, oh, so the Caves of Boredom or the Caves of Forgetfulness are just me living with my ADHD every single day.
Caves of Executive Dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
just the whole show.
Oh god, I gotta put that on a D&D campaign somehow. So go ahead, roll a wisdom save. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, you failed your wisdom save, so you know you should leave, but there's this really interesting crack on the wall and like your leg kind of itches, and oh god, it's been 6 hours.
Truly.
Oof.
My day yesterday.
So Wembley and Boober at this point realize that they're forgetting things, and they're like, oh, we got to sing the remembering song. And as soon as I said that in my head, I was like, oh, please let them forget it. Please let them forget it halfway through. That would be so funny. And they did. And it was awesome.
Yeah. Like as they go throughout the song, they start forgetting more and more and more until it's just na 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 something, something, something.
Yeah, there's a great little bit where Wembley comes up with the wrong lyric and Boober just kind of nods and is like, yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
This might be me misremembering, ironic because it's the remembering song, but do you guys know the song Cheer Up from Sesame Street?
Mm.
No, I only know Cheer Up by Real Big Fish.
not the same one. It's a song, I don't remember what VHS tape I had it on, but they're all on the rooftop of 1, 2, 3, Sully's playing the piano, And then Hoots is there, and Big Bird, and a bunch of kids and humans. And it has almost the same, like, meter, and I don't speak music well enough to know, but it
meter,
as
rhythm,
I was
and
hearing
melody.
This, I was like, where have I heard this before? And it's like, oh, this is Cheer Up from Sesame Street.
Mm.
And then, yeah, I also enjoyed the na-na-na-na left wing, and that reminded me of the La La song from Bert and Ernie.
I do know that one.
That would track pretty well to that too.
Nice.
It's funny you bring that up, because this is actually the same melody as another song that we will hear later in Fraggle Rock.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh.
Yep.
I've commented on this before. They have a lot of reuse of sort of vibe and tone. They do a lot of really cool original stuff and a lot of really cool sort of genre mashup. And then they have two kind of songs that they wind up hitting a lot, which is sort of sad, quiet, pensive, processing, solo, Fraggle, and big upbeat, we're all going to do a thing and it's going to be a bop, Fraggles. And this might be a third one evolving.
I'm not sure if this falls into like its own genre of song, but it's just exactly the same melody as one that we'll hear later, which they don't do very often. They very rarely use the exact same melody, but it does happen twice that I can think of off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing new under the sun. And like, if you make 2 to 3 songs an episode, and then you make 70 something episodes,
5 seasons,
yeah, you might wind up reusing a motif or two, and I'm not gonna judge them for that at all.
Yeah, totally.
What I am gonna judge is the list that they make, which is 1, go to the caves, 2, I don't remember, there's 3 steps, and I only wrote down my reaction, but I remember it's like, go to the caves and get Boober and Wembley.
Mm-hmm.
They don't put leave the caves on the list.
Right. Item number 3 is just, and don't forget to remember.
Yeah. Which is like, that's not helpful. You need to make sure that you remember to leave.
Oh, I was just going to say, being more specific of like, don't forget to remember what?
Don't forget to count. Don't forget to breathe in and out.
Ah, sorry. That's one of my favorite obscure Grover quotes.
Remember who? Remember what? Remember Chicka Chicka Slim Shady.
Very nice.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Listener, you cannot see, but Beth just deflated like a wacky waving inflatable arm waving tube man that had its cord plugged. It was a beautiful thing to watch.
I was just gonna say, I tried to give them a little leniency about how not great their list was, because they did have the realization in talking with the storyteller that their friends were in grave danger, and so I was like, oh, they clearly wrote this in a rush on the way to these caves, mm-hmm. and were not using their full brain capacity in maybe making a slightly more detailed list.
Yeah. So they've all got these cute little pieces of paper somehow stuck to their backs.
There's tape to, or yeah, I guess they wouldn't be taped. So yeah, somehow like attached to their backs. And then of course, immediately their entire plan falls apart so quickly.
Just completely. I also love that Moki's like, I brought the poem so I could read the rest of it to Boober. And it's like, Moki, he didn't want to hear the poem.
Poetry ends up saving the day, Adam.
Yes.
Poetry is the hero of this episode.
Is she?
Yes.
Is she?
Poetry. Not Moki. Poetry.
Poetry. Now that I will agree with.
That is
poetry,
not
is the hero of this episode.
Poems. I love poems.
I love a poem.
Yeah, I love poems.
I just don't always love a poet.
I mean, I've known so many poets that I have to say, I agree.
Well, it's, I mean, I don't know. There is a specific type of performing artist who gets into whatever medium they can get into specifically because it means they will have a captive audience and a guaranteed source of attention.
Mm. Oh, so many slam poets, that is their personality. And I won't get into it. There is a bit of huge dialogue in the national slam poetry scene for the last week about people over the age of 25 who are still doing slam poetry. And I have so many takes on that. Mostly, if it's not hurting anybody and they're happy doing it, let them do it. Anyway, yeah. That's another rant. But there are certainly like slam poets, but also just like page poets and writers in general, any kind of artist, you know, if they make that their whole personality and they foist it upon, you know, other folks, because they're like, this is clearly more important than anything else going on. Yeah, those people suck, and they definitely exist. But I stand by the point that poetry saves the day in this episode.
Poetry 100% saves the day, and there's a reason I love poetry, despite the people who annoy me. I'm used to seeing these particular people at, like, stand-up open mics or, like, music open mics. Because it's not just poets. There's a specific type of and I say this frustration in part because I have been that kind of person before, and we always dislike most in others what we dislike about ourselves. But, like, good God. Like, no.
Stand-up and musicians trying to infiltrate mics that are specifically for poetry is another rant that I can give you for a different day.
That's
a lot of big feelings there.
Wild, and I have no idea why anyone would do that. Anyways, point being, those plants are terrifying.
They really are.
Oh my God.
Don't feed the plants, kids.
We learned that not only are these flowers, you know, emitting this steam or smoke or whatever that slowly makes you forget, they also have these long, tendrily vines that reach out and grab you and presumably then maybe eat you. I mean, that's mostly what they seem like giant carnivorous plants to me. It seems like, you know, why else would a plant grab a thing other than to eat it?
Maybe it just wants to hold it.
Well, the storyteller says that, like, two fraggles, like, named Tilly and Millie went into the caves and were never, like, seen again. Mm-hmm. And the implication is that the plants ate them or disposed of them. It's left vague purposely because this is a kid's show.
Yeah.
A lot of nutrients on a dead body.
There's a moment where Wembley is, like, wrapped up in the vines, and it looks f***ed up.
Yeah.
Sorry, future Beth, to censor me.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right.
It looked wild and very dark and creepy.
Terrifying.
He looked dead.
Well, there's also a bit where he's like, I think I've forgotten how to walk. And it's like, that's how the plants do. You forget how to move, and then you just sort of lie there and get digested in live time.
Mm-hmm. It is, that's really like a carnivorous plant, kind of like when, you know, like a Venus flytrap, a fly gets stuck there and then they're unable to move and they're just stuck until they're slowly consumed by the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Wait, reading too far into things on this podcast? Why, Beth?
The space that I created specifically for that purpose. Does anyone else remember the
21st night of September? Sorry, go ahead.
I do remember that. Also the 5th of November.
Mm-hmm.
The flash forward 10 years episode of Boy Meets World, where this group of friends that they've established in their college years is having a big old fight, and the audience gets a look at what their lives would be like 10 years from now when Mr. Feeny retires, and they all come back together having moved on with their separate lives. And, you know, for the most part, they're doing fine. You know, they have some personal regrets, and then the comedic other shoe drops in the form of Eric walking in as he's gone full hermit.
Yes.
Long brown robes,
dances
long
with
shaggy
squirrels or something.
Plays
I
with
do
squirrels.
Remember this. Yep. I do.
Mr. Matthews? Mr. Squirrels. Eric? Plays with. He has brought his manifesto, this huge tome that has one page in it. He says, everything I know is in me manifesto. And all he wrote was, lose one friend, lose all friends, lose yourself. They were like, that's it? That's the meaning of life right there? And he said, nothing else seemed important. And I remember watching that episode over and over again as a young person and not getting it. Like, I get that they, you know, their lives are not better having broken up as friends than they would have been if they'd stayed together as friends. But that idea of lose one friend, lose all friends, lose yourself didn't quite click for me. I was like, how does losing one friend lead to losing all friends? And I think that's a bit of what's happening to Boober here, because he also does lose a sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, like everything's a metaphor here, but I think forgetting in this instance can be a metaphor for disconnection.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're disconnected from your community and actual forgetting, like forgetting the teachings of your ancestors and the warnings about, like, oh, hey, don't go to the caves of boredom because of this really important thing, that there is a certain danger in forgetting those things. And the plants, to me, seem like a metaphor for the people who want to make you forget those things in order to disconnect you from that knowledge of who you are and where you belong and who your people are and the fact that we are all connected and then they will try and, like, not only make you forget those things and then take advantage of you mm-hmm. once you have forgotten.
I mean, that's classic abuser doctrine, is first yep. you isolate the victim and then you can exploit them.
Yep.
You see that in abusive relationships. You see that in grand scale imperial fascism. Like,
yeah.
And I think the beautiful thing for me about this is they were saying, like, look, community safeguards against that.
Yeah.
Because it does. Having a really good, like, one of the ways that, and I get a little bit personal here, one of the ways that the alt-right and neo-Nazis recruit is they go to Depression forum boards.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I was unaware of that particular tactic.
Oh, they've been doing that for a while, and I have been talking about this for a lot longer than anyone has been actually listening, because I grew up on 4chan back when there was a few redeeming qualities. Ooh. They're all gone now. There's no redeeming yeah. qualities left. But one of the few redeeming qualities about it was, like, if you were miserable and you went to 4chan to talk about it, people would respond. I remember really vividly, I was like 19, I was in college, and I was having a horrible depressive spiral, and I made a post about it on the depression subreddit, and after half an hour there was no responses, and I went and I looked at the other posts, and it was just a bunch of posts like mine with no comments and no upvotes. And I went and I did the same thing on 4chan, and within 15 minutes there were people, like, responding and, you know, offering tips and tricks, or telling jokes to make me feel better, or sharing memes. And some of them were just being jerks, but, like, they were talking to me and I felt less alone.
Right.
And there are people who will use that sense of offering inclusion and community to brainwash and exploit people into white supremacy. That is a very real thing we need to be aware of. And the way to safeguard against it is to make sure that people have healthy communities.
Yes.
Yeah.
Inclusion is an incredibly powerful weapon against fascism. Full stop.
Yeah. It's really easy to target people when they're at their lowest and, you know, when they're isolated. They also, John Oliver just did a whole segment about scammers that are currently mm-hmm. happening, like how mm-hmm. they target people that are by themselves. And those are the folks that think they're building relationships with real people, and then they have all their money taken. So it's a really awful trait that we see in fascism, and people being scammed out of their livelihood and all of these different things. And, you know, this time also flowers that make you forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But luckily, there's a bleach nut there, and it gets broken by accident. And Boober has the moment of, like, coughing and hacking, and then he suddenly has clear head. Which earlier when they broke the bleach nut, I had a moment where I was like, this seems strange. Okay. And then it came back, and I was like, oh, they made sure we knew what this was early on. So now when it happens, we understand why suddenly he can remember.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, set up payoff.
Yeah, great device.
I wrote in my notes, this is the battle of the smelly smokes. and it felt right, like alt title.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Battle of the Smelly Smokes. Oh, I like that. So yeah, I love that Boober ends up saving himself through, like,
laundry?
The things that he loves, like mm-hmm. laundry and cooking. It's beautiful because, so he, oh, sorry, we should backtrack. Moki, Gobo, and Red, they reach the Caves of Boredom finally, and they realize that they're starting to forget, and they read their lists, but they keep forgetting, and they look around helpless, and the next time we see them, they are just fully entwined, trapped by these vines.
Also terrifying.
Also terrifying. And Boober finds and picks up Moki's poem without noticing that the three of them are just right there.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And so Moki's poem in the first half, Boober seized on to that because of, like, yes, Fraggle Rock is noisy, and I want to go live alone. That's the message I'm going to seize upon here. And now he's reading the second part where, what is it? But once alone, I miss my friends, the meals we've shared, the songs which sends me back to find the fraggles of my heart. And he's like, oh, okay, that rings a bell. Songs, friends, meals, he's my friend. And when you have a friend, you make a big meal and invite him over to share it. Now, if I can only remember what a meal is, I can make one for the little yes. fella.
Yeah.
So he just starts throwing together all of the stuff he can find into his wash tub.
That's how you cook, right?
Yeah.
That's how you
it's
cook.
It's like rocks and moss and just, like, really random things. And he's like, yep, making a delicious meal out of all of this. It's really, it's sweet and also funny.
Yeah.
And that's when he breaks the bleach nut. And he has a great line when he's come to where he yells, like, come on, Wimbley, you've got to smell my laundry.
Yes.
Yeah. And so he manages to get everybody out. And it's rad. And there's this wonderful... I love... It's the trope of somebody who is, like, flailing to try to stay on top of a chaotic situation but doing their best because they're being so frantic about it mm-hmm. is really nice. You see that in action movies a lot. You don't really see it in mental situations as much, but it still hits. Like, the beat still lands. And they get out, and there's a great bit that he has. Boober says to Wembley, he's like, I'm never going to leave. I'm going to stay at Fraggle Rock forever. Or at least a week. Anyway, Wembley. And it's just this great, like, yeah, yeah, okay, quiet time is important. Just, you know, in moderation.
And it also rings a little bit of, like, fourth wall breaking. Like, don't worry, we're still going to do this next week on Fraggle Rock.
I hadn't considered it from that angle, but you're right.
There will still be some issues. Don't worry, folks. Yeah.
Yes.
Sweet. Anybody else have anything they want to say before we cut back to the last Doc and Sprocket moment?
When Wembley forgets how to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I was so deep into my Eric plays with squirrels, insane hermit out in the woods allegory that I was like, yes, because when we forget that we need each other, we forget how to be human.
Yeah.
Or dancer. Or Fraggle.
I also just wanted to say one thing, because I think we skipped over a part where Boober has a bindle as he's going to the caves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But as anyone who's ever tried to put a bindle together before, you could only get so much into that little bandana. So he has like a double-ended bindle, mm-hmm. which I thought was genius. And I just wanted to give him props for thinking of that.
Yeah. And he probably had to go back and make a few trips because his wash tub clearly did not fit in yes. that bindle.
Yeah.
No, it's foldable.
Mm. Oh, that sounds great.
Collapsible.
Collapsible. It's like Doc's bookshelf. So, speaking of Doc, we cut back and they're trying to do like a hostage exchange handoff of the dog food and the blueprints. And Sprocket just winds up cuddling Doc and licking his face.
Yeah.
And Doc's like, let's get rid of this smelly old line. And he has this, there's this great little bit of back and forth. Doc says, I've been silly, haven't I? And Sprocket nods. And Doc says, we both have. And Sprocket does the little thing with his paw. And it's like, yeah, no, Doc, that's, sometimes it's both of you. And sometimes it's just you, buddy. Sometimes it's just you. And that's okay, too. Just own it, apologize, and move forward.
It's like, yeah, Sprocket was only matching your silliness.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, no, if you're going to, you know, enforce this boundary and say that I can't have my doggy snacks that are over there, then I'm going to enforce it right back to you and say you can't have this blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
How does that feel?
Yep.
And then they're going to take the borderline down, except then Doc realizes that it's the perfect clothesline for his laundry.
Oh, right. Yeah, indoor clothesline.
We can leave it up a little longer. And it's like a nice little tie back to the Fraggle plot because, you know,
laundry.
Boober laundry. It's just like a quirky little moment to end on with them where they've resolved it, but he's like, actually though, I gotta do this too. He gets distracted. He's like about to take it down. He's like, you know, it's Doc being neurodivergent, being like immediately distracted by like, oh, this is something else I should be doing as well, and forgetting about, you know, his actions.
Yeah. Alrighty. Beth, you want to tell us about the international versions?
Yeah, so according to Muppet Wiki, in the UK version, like Doc in the US version, the captain puts out his washing to dry, but gets frustrated as Sprocket keeps getting in his way. He notices that Sprocket has chewed up his favorite book, which infuriates him. The captain divides the lighthouse in two and stops Sprocket from crossing onto his side. However, it begins raining, and the captain can't reach the washing outside because the door is on Sprocket's side of the lighthouse. The captain decides to take down the boundary line as he realizes it wasn't such a good idea. Uncle Matt witnesses traffic wardens delivering, quote, love letters, tickets, and yellow shoes, wheel clamps, to the shiny creatures, cars, as well as seeing how emotional the silly creatures get when they find them.
That sounds amazing, actually.
I was like, yeah, I want to see that one.
Shall we talk about how to make the world a little fragglier?
Sometimes when the world feels really muddled and difficult, the best medicine is poetry and laundry.
On the heels of that, if you're really excited about a poem you wrote and your friend doesn't want to hear it, go find a friend who does. don't force your art on people. Art is a gift, and so is attention.
Ooh. Me and my partner should relay that to each other more often.
Remember that borders are at best arbitrary and always establish an us versus them mentality.
Ooh.
Mm.
Also, don't feed the plants.
It's totally okay to go take some quiet time by yourself, as long as you make a list of what you need to not forget to remember. Make sure you set yourself up for success in staying connected to your community and remembering the important things.
Yeah. Alrighty. Cool. Thank you so much for joining us, Cameron.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
Do you want to tell people where they can find your stuff?
Yeah, I'm on...
Or at least the stuff you want to share. Don't tell them where, like, your hidden stash of
my
gold
address
is.
My address is... No.
123 Fake Street.
That's right. My phone number is 555. no, you can find me on most of the social medias at Cam Garrity. My website is also camgarrity.com. And I was thinking of joining Mastodon recently, but I decided that I'd rather wait until they made pterodactyl, triceratops, or saber-toothed tiger instead. I told that joke on another podcast and they cut it, and it made me so sad.
How dare.
I don't think they knew what the Power Rangers were, and I was like, come on.
Come on.
Boo. So,
I mean, we could do one better, but also one worse, and instead of cut it, just make it the ending tag.
Perfect. Whatever you want to do.
Beth and Julia, you want to tell people where they can find your stuff?
Yeah, you can find me at Beth Anna Cook on social media, and occasionally writing stuff for Tough Pigs.
And you can find me at Geek Girl Grown Up on social media. I also occasionally write for Tough Pigs, and my poetry doesn't necessarily save the day for most people, but you can find some of my poetry at juliagaskill.com.
Hey, you don't know that.
That's fair. Maybe it's
once you put it out
day.
Into the world, you have no idea the effect it has.
Very
yeah.
true.
Aww. And you write about important stuff too.
That you do.
I try. And I also write about a lot of stupid stuff, to be fair.
Stupid stuff is great. Yeah. Stupid art is awesome.
Stupid art is also important.
Yes.
One of my favorite writing exercises is to sit down and try to write the worst story I can. It's awesome. Highly recommend.
I've been talking up writing bad poetry with high schoolers recently and how
Heck
there's
yes.
nothing wrong with writing a bad poem.
Oh, yeah. It's very freeing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go ahead. I have a lo-fi hip-hop EP. It is very much a first EP, but if you are curious as to the way my mind processes music and like any of the very niche versions of, or niche songs that I do covers of, if you played Beginner's Guide, I have a cover of a song from that. The Spotify name is Badger Blossom, all lowercase, all one word. If you want to check that out, go for it. If not, I'm not going to worry about it.
All right. That is it for this week. Reminder to check out toughpigs.com. Give us a good review on your podcatcher of choice. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Don't forget to dance your cares away.
Down at Fraggle Talk.
Fraggle Talk Classic is brought to you by toughpigs.com. Fraggle Talk art by Dave Hultin Jr. The Fraggle Rock mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of the Jim Henson Company. All rights reserved. The Fraggle Rock theme song, written by Philip Balsam and Dennis Lee, is used with permission. Special thanks to the Jim Henson Company and the entire Fraggle Rock family. For more from Tough Pigs, please find us at Tough Pigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, TeePublic, and Patreon. Fraggle Talk Classic is produced and edited by me, Beth Cook. Thank you to Joe Hennis, the Tough Pigs Muppet Fan Podcast executive producer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time, down at Fraggle Talk.
So it moves.
It's missing a screw that...
Aren't we all?
Yeah, exactly.